episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm, Zuji.com, an online travel agent providing flights and hotels bookings worldwide, Mint.com, personal budgeting and financial management software, and GoToWebinar, unlimited webinars for one low rate. Go to ChinaMoneyNetwork.com and click on our sponsors links. Thank you, everyone, so much. Hello, everybody. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Aidan Yao, an emerging Asia economist at French financial services firm AXA Investment Managers. Previously, Aidan was a senior financial market analyst at the Hong Kong Monetary Authority and also worked at the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. We're both in Hong Kong, and today we talk on the phone about China's latest economic numbers and also about the performance of China's qualified domestic institutional investors and what's to come for the program. Here is our conversation. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, Aidan. Welcome.
Hi, Nina. Great to be here.
Let's look at the economic numbers first. Earlier this week, we had second quarter GDP number and also China's credit data out. GDP up 7.5%, higher than market expectation of 7.4%. What's your reading of these numbers?
I think this is broadly consistent with our view from the very start that we think the economy has really turned the corner around the end of Q1, so around the end of March to early April, really thanks to government's targeted stimulus on both the monetary and the fiscal front. We've seen subsequently over the past couple of months the PMI numbers improving, external demand is boosting export growth, and we've seen very clearly that the infrastructure investment have picked up, offsetting the slowdown in real estate market. So I think this is broadly in line with our view of acceleration in economic momentum, although I have to say that the scale of that growth in Q2 was slightly stronger than our anticipation.
Basically, you think the government's policies worked?
I think the targeted stimulus that designed to reduce or mitigate the near-term risk on growth has clearly worked, reflected in the activity numbers and acceleration of growth. Also, I think that the reform measures are showing some good impact in the structure of the economy as well, particularly around the funding side of those infrastructure projects. So I think so far, so good.
Now, for credit conditions, total social financing for the first half year was 10.57 trillion RMB, up just a little bit less than half a trillion RMB compared with a year ago. New RMB loans also higher than 2013. If we look at the credit numbers specifically, what is driving credit growth?
Very clearly that you've seen the a pickup in the bank's on-balance sheet loan, and that has been consistent with our view that as the shadow banking system shrinks, as you know, risk is being repriced and investors are more cautious about the quality of those products, you know, the shadow banking credit intermediation will reduce. And to maintain the stability of a credit intermediation in the market, it has been our view that the bank's balance sheet loans growth need to pick up. And that's really what we have observed since March, really, between April to June. However, in the latest number, as you point out, that we're also seeing a bit of a pickup in the shadow banking credit as well. At this point, I don't think that credit has been flowing into the property markets, but it's probably more helping to you know, sustain the very rapid growth in infrastructure projects. Although I think going forward, the authorities will have to manage how how fast the credit growth taking place in the shadow banking system, because that's clearly the sector that the authorities want to push for deleveraging as opposed to releveraging.
During the previous cycle, a lot of the fiscal investments were financed with local government debt, but this time around, it's more through the banking system.
I think that from that perspective, I think it's quite a better structure. Not only banks is providing these funding through a more sort of a transparent channel, because you know banks obviously report their balance sheet and their loan growth on a very timely manner compared to you know shadow banking entities. Previously, it's been a lot of the projects being financed through local governments taking on debt. And that's why you're seeing a very rapid leverage build up on local government balance sheets through the shadow banking system. But if you look at what have happened over the last couple of months when the government initiated these infrastructure projects, there's been funding from PBOC through the China Development Bank, which means that this is a central government credit. And also you have seen in the last 2 months that the fiscal spending by the central government has been increasing very fast. And also we have heard that there's going to be private capital being channeled into these infrastructure investments. So this is really a key point that the funding for these investments has changed from the more risky part, i.e. local governments and shadow banking, into more transparent and more, I guess, the most sustainable part from the central government and bank loans. I think that's a very conducive development.
Some people look at this better economic data. You know, some analysts are cheering this data, but some are not, saying that the Chinese government is backing out from reform in order to realize economic growth target. Would you agree with that view?
I think in the near term, I think the government is clearly has got a very strong desire and interest to mitigate the downside risk in the economy. And the most effective way of providing that growth support is through infrastructure investment. You know, lifting consumption is a very prolonged process. So for near-term risk management, that's probably not going to help that much. But once again, I'll come back to that point. Well, it's still infrastructure investment. But the funding structure has clearly changed. Previously, the financing was through shadow banking and through local government balance sheet, and that introduced really two major problems. First one is that there's a maturity mismatch, i.e. the shadow banking credit is in short term, but you invest in longer term infrastructure projects, which takes years to generate any cash flows. And the second one is that shadow banking credit is very expensive, so the funding cost is quite high for this infrastructure to pay off. But going forward, as the central government is providing more financing through longer-term bank loans or even central bank bond issuance, that maturity mismatch problem will become less significant. And also, because the central government is providing credit, the funding cost will also be reduced as well. So I think while the investment is still playing a role in mitigating the short-term downside growth risk, but there is a very significant improvement in the financing of these investments.
Looking into the next half year, what do you expect from the policy front?
I think from a near-term perspective, these targeted stimulus will perhaps more likely to continue. One reason is that if you listen to the comments from the top officials recently, it seems to be that the government is a fairly serious about defending the 7.5% growth target. Going forward, I think for the longer term, I would expect structural reforms also to take place as well. I mean, in the last couple of months, we've already seen financial liberalization on the interest rate front, on the exchange rate front, and capital accounts as being accelerating, and also reforms around SOEs and one-child policies. So I think it's, the government is sticking to its reform book that announced in the 18th plenum.
Do you see that the government is likely to cut the bank reserve requirement ratio broadly?
I don't think the cut of the RR universally for everyone is on the table, especially since the PBOC has become fairly innovative in terms of providing selective cuts of RR and make use of its relending facility, as well as introducing this pledge supplementary lending facility as well. So I think there's a clear innovation coming through in PBOC's policy arrangement. And I think that the key consideration there is that if you cut the RR universally, there's a risk that the liquidity you unleashed is going to get channeled back into property developers, the housing market, and the shadow banking system. And I think for those sectors, the authorities still want to push for deleveraging. And therefore, I think in this kind of environment, the selective cut of RR for example, small, medium-sized businesses, agricultural companies, agricultural businesses are more effective in this regard.
But of course, those businesses are very small scale, and some would say the effect of those may not be enough to generate enough growth to support the 7.5% target.
And I think that what we have just seen over the last 2 months in terms of credit numbers and the economic growth rebound, it's providing argument against those skeptics.
How about the challenges the economy faces right now? What concerns you the most?
I guess the housing market is still the biggest downside risk facing the economy. I mean, this morning, out of the press, we've seen the house prices continue to drop. And according to official data, that more cities are now experiencing small price declines than previously reported. So I think the housing market correction is clearly still underway. I don't think the government will, ease the policy both on a monetary front as well as administrative policy in a very substantial scale just now for the time being to revive the housing market. I think there's an interest to keep the market correction going, but the government will fine-tune the policy to manage systemic risk. So that's for one, and the second one is obviously the shadow banking. I mentioned about some of the revival in the shadow banking credit in the latest monthly release. I think that's something that needs to be watched by the authorities and by the market, that clearly a revival of leverage in that sector will not be conducive for development for the long-run sustainability of the financial system.
Now, let's first talk about the property market. You say the government is likely to fine-tune the sector. What do you mean?
So things like, easing the restrict purchase requirements that are currently imposed by some second and third tier cities. We're already seeing that the news reported that certain cities have already eased the policy, and some other cities are considering of easing these policies. Now, for the most part, I don't think easing these policies represent a change of a policy stance by the authorities, because the overall theme of economic reform. It's about reducing the administrative control on the economy and moving it more towards the market. And these purchase restriction policies are a reflection of still administrative controls being placed on the market. So I think that right now, by easing these policies, you provide some downside support to the property market. So that's conducive for the near term. And the longer term, these policies need to be removed anyway. So I think it's a killing two birds with one stone.
I mean, the government has to keep a balance between allowing the property market to correct, but also not to correct too much. How do you think they should manage the balance between the two forces?
That's clearly a very difficult thing to do. It's a very big challenge, and governments is sort of walking on a tightrope. I think same to us, that you just have to constantly observe the market, the movement. So far, I think the correction is still quite manageable, and that's why that you see that the government is not getting very agitated and ease policy in a large scale. But I think that if these speed of a correction or scale of the correction becomes much more substantial and showing signs of getting out of control, then under that kind of scenario, you could see the government making support more available, but more from the perspective of financial stability as opposed to, in a desire of reviving the housing market. I think, if it is an easing policy, that will be coming from the stability interest.
You've previously worked at Hong Kong Monetary Authority, and also you did some research about China's Qualified Domestic Institutional Investor Program, the QDII program. You did a study in 2012, and you found that poor performance was the main reason driving asset outflows from this fund, and that fund managers of QDII funds generally lack the skills required to invest in global markets. So in the past 2 years, have any of your findings changed?
I think the performance have definitely improved, and that's really thanks to the rally in the global market, offshore markets relative to Asia local markets. However, I have to say that the QDII funds is still facing lack of interest, I would say. And I think the key reason for that is a lot of local retail investors don't really see the desire of diversification. And this is really, by the way, that the key reason that we need to have channels through which that local investor can invest overseas, because they can reduce their overall portfolio risk. But however, I don't think that the risk of diversification idea is a very entrenched in the mind of retail investors. And also, if you look at what's competing with QDII investment, you have a flourish of wealth management products that's offering fairly high interest rate. And still, before the correction this year, housing market was still very strong, providing good returns for investment. So I think, the retail investors are not really seeing the value of investing in QDII, and that's why the industry is still facing a lot of headwinds, despite the fact that the performance has improved.
Do you see that change, the attitude of retail investors towards diversifying?
I think for that to really change, you need to have the domestic economy, the domestic financial markets are changing as well. For example, these wealth management products and trust products are offering very high returns, about offering this the misperception that they are being risk-free. I think that kind of things need to change, and investors need to realize that that these investments that offer very high interest that do contain risks. I think that sentiment needs to change. And secondly, more investment education needs to take place, help to let the investor know that risk diversification through portfolio investment it's very important for managing wealth and reduce overall risks. I think these are very much a sort of a longer term process that really takes time, and the way to do that is through more education, more reforms through the internal financial system, and perhaps helping this process will be capital counter liberalization that really offers local investors more channels of going overseas instead of just through QDII. And one of them taking place in coming months is the through train program between Shanghai and Hengzhen, making local investors easier to invest in the overseas market will clearly help.
Well, Aiden, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.